Grab your favorite caffeinated beverage and get cozy because you are listening to Mindful as a Mother with Paige Bruce and Lindsay Adams.
Do you remember those toys from when we were kids where you would fit the different shaped pegs into the different shaped holes?
Yeah.
That's a lot like parenting, except when you have a neurodivergent child, using traditional parenting techniques is like trying to put the round peg in the star hole.
That's exactly how I felt when I discovered that Sam was neurodivergent. I knew that traditional parenting techniques and even the approaches that I was taught in grad school, they didn't feel right in my soul to like supporting who he was as a human. And they also just weren't effective. And that's when I discovered the power of responsive parenting.
Exactly. So if you are like us and are interested in tailoring responsive parenting techniques to your neurodivergent world, check out our Parenting Your NeuroSpicy video series. You can find it in our Stand store at the link in the show notes.
It is so hard to find social and emotional learning toys that will actually be engaging and fun for your child. And that's why we are so excited that we are partnering with Slumberkins.
In our home, we're really struggling right now with the idea that I'm the worst kid ever. I'm a horrible sister anytime we make a mistake. And so we recently brought in the Yak, which is all about self-acceptance for kids. And it's made such a difference. When we're struggling, we can remember that our brain is lying to us and say Yak's affirmation, I am loved as I am. When things get tough, I go back to my heart. I know I am enough.
Oh, I love this. It's hard for me to find toys that are in or stuffies that are engaging for my kids. And normally I take them to my office, but with the Slumberkins, I haven't even been able to get them to my office because my kids are so obsessed. So if you want to try Slumberkins, you can go to their website. We'll also put it in the show notes and use the code MindfulAsAMother for 15% off at checkout.
This podcast is not intended to be a substitute for therapy or the therapeutic relationship, and the information given in this podcast is purely for educational purposes and is not intended to replace the advice of a professional.
Hello and welcome back to Mindful as a Mother. My name's Lindsay and I'm here with Paige per usual. Say hi, Paige.
Hello, everybody.
And we have a very special guest today, Jessica Sinarski. And I'll just let you introduce yourself because I can't even do it justice.
I am so happy to be here. I am also a mom and a therapist, and I am an author of a number of books. And I just am super, super passionate about helping everybody understand their brain, especially kids and all of the grown-ups around kids. So that's my jam.
We're super excited for this because I feel like we're very on the same wavelength as you, but you, the neuroscience piece, the nerdy piece, that's what I call Paige, gets lards out over that. And it's confusing to me. So I really like it when people can like break it down in a way that I can understand so I can either teach it to other people or other people can learn from it. So thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I specifically love it because the brain science is the foundation for me in really understanding what regulation is. And then something unique that Jessica does is that she also works with school districts and child welfare agencies to provide this education, which is a lot of where Lindsay and I move towards. Like we really are passionate about making resources accessible in as many communities that need it as possible. And so finding grants to provide this type of education and foundation of understanding like why safe relationships make a difference of how kids act in the classroom and at home. So yes, I geek out about it and I'm so excited.
My heart is like exploding also, inside because this is just all the stuff I love. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah. I was going to say we need to chat with you after because we're trying to get into like school districts and like working with DFS more in women's shelters. So we need to chat about how to do that because we're just learning.
Perfect. Well, two of the books that Jessica recently published that I'm very excited about is Riley the Brave's Big Feelings activity books. And I don't know how often I get requested, like, do you have any recommendations for workbooks at home for parents and kids? So I think this is going to be a great resource. Sometimes I think to myself, like, I just need to set aside time to create all these things. Because I'm like having such a hard time finding resources, like actionable resources. And then also Light Up the Learning Brain, which I believe is more for the parent or educator. Is that right?
So Light Up the Learning Brain is coming soon-ish, even before Light Up the Learning Brain is Your Amazing Brain. And Your Amazing Brain is a very visual comic book, sort of graphic novel style look through the brain that I am just thrilled to have out in the world.
So this isn't on video, but she held up the book, and if you could see Paige and I's face, we instantly fell in love. We are in love.
Nice jaw drop. Like, I wish I had my camera. I wish I was better at that, like, capturing moments, because you both literally had a jaw drop and it was fantastic. That was everything.
We'll recreate it later for you, because you can take a picture, because it is that cute. And I can already tell the comic book style, like, your kids are going to be drawn to it, because that's the other thing is sometimes the feeling and brain books are boring.
Yes. So Paige, exactly what you said about, struggling to find resources. I would get asked, it's very funny to me that I write therapeutic books, or like, you know, books that help with therapeutic-y type things, because I really didn't use very many in my practice because I struggled to find good ones. I struggled to find things that didn't over-explain or weren't using adult language, or that kids actually wanted to read and pick up and didn't like run from because it's this terrible stuff on the cover or whatever it is. And so that was the birth of the Riley the Brave series. And then what I found was, there are three books in the Riley series, but I would create these additional resources to help people put it in practice. And I really found I just needed to get that all in one place. And so that's what the activity book does, is it's great for therapists, but it's also just super user-friendly for parent and child to enjoy together, not even to work through together, but just to really enjoy learning more about their brains and feelings and what makes us tick and what makes the tough stuff tough and how we can find our way through.
I love it. I actually work with a school right now, and part of the beginning of the year curriculum that I semi-created, right? Because like science is science, but it's all about learning about the basics of the brain and the different parts of the brain in kid-friendly language. So I immediately went and looked up that specific book, Your Amazing Brain, because I'm like, this is so great, because my groups are from first to third in like a little cluster, and then fourth to eighth in a little cluster. And I'm like, this is so appropriate across kind of both age groups to explain it in a way that's friendly. And I loved the colors. I'm a big like children's book person, so the comic book style sells me. And then also for the teachers, like I can recommend it as a resource for the teachers to have in the classroom to reinforce a lot of what we're seeing in some of those younger grades too.
That is exactly my hope with this book specifically, with Your Amazing Brain, is across multiple ages to really capture kid imagination, and for all of us like Lindsay, who maybe brain science doesn't make us light up with joy in the same way that it does for me and Paige, that Your Amazing Brain will just simplify some of these concepts and make it visual and show, you know, some of the key points that the nerdy folks want everybody to understand, how, like, why connections in the brain matter, why safe and secure relationships impact behavior, you know, the presence of or lack of safe and secure relationships, and also to be affirming of neurodiversity, that there are going to be things that are easier for your brain than my brain and vice versa. And that's okay. Our brains are unique, and that's a beautiful thing. It's not there's no one size fits all. And even without a one size fits all, there are some of these foundational things that can help parents be brain builders and can help teachers understand behavior in a different way and interact in a different way, depending on which part of that kid's brain is online and depending on which part of their brain is running the show, right? Because we all have, I use the Dan Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson's house model of the brain. You know, we all have downstairs brain moments. We all have those times that our act without thinking team wants to take over. And so you'll see that throughout the Riley series in those animal characteristics are, you know, tiger moments and turtle moments. And then your amazing brain ages that up so we can take it to the older kids in a useful way.
I love that. I recognized the other day I had a teacher pull me aside for a consult about a kiddo, and my honest go-to was, we need to create moments of connection. And I had like a response in my body, even though I believe so strongly that this is the key to support regulation and like neurodiversity affirming regulation. And in the classroom, right, we have these safe, secure relationships. I recognize that I still experience quite a bit of pushback from the educational community or even other mental health providers when that is like, so like the special education teacher or the psychologist on site or the counselor on site, even though I'm contracted in as like a bonus counselor. So I recognize that that's still where we're at in a lot of these systems, and that I have fear of that pushback, that that's not going to be considered an appropriate approach. And so I am really hoping that that's something that we can talk about, those foundational building blocks, like caregivers, including parents and teachers, which is one of your specific things to discuss today.
That's right. Yes. So I also have found that disconnect sometimes where teachers will get told a lot, relationship matters. Many, you know, most teachers believe that relationships matter and kids learn better when they feel safe and seen and those kinds of things. But there's a couple sticky parts that I see in that become challenging. One is sometimes that's said without compassion for the demand on a teacher's nervous system every second of every day, right? So when we're asking teachers to bring their upstairs brain, to bring their connection seeking part of their brain to this kiddo who is in protection mode, who is sending danger signals, who is distracting from lessons or creating a ruckus with this other kid or whatever it is, right? It takes extra energy to choose connection mode. To have the brain juice for connection mode when you're getting lots of signals of threat from a kid, even though those signals of threat may be coming because they're not feeling connected. So it becomes this vicious cycle of disconnection where defense brains are running the show. This is part of why I love bringing the work into schools, because we can have compassion for all brains and nervous systems in the school space. That when I'm working with counselors, for example, school counselors, I'll often hear them frustrated about teacher behavior with a student that seems to be escalating the student's behavior. And part of what I encourage the counselors to hold is like, that's coming from somewhere too. And it makes sense that when, you know, downstairs brain moments beget downstairs brain moments. And so for the teacher, for the parent listening, when your kiddo is sending you porcupine spikes all day long, or they're shut down in their turtle shell, it doesn't necessarily spark loads of, gosh, I hope we can bond and connect. And I'm just going to keep reaching out for connection. And that's just with one or two or three or seven kids in your family. For teachers, we're talking about 15, 20, 30, or, you know, a couple hundred, if you're a middle or high school teacher, that's a lot of students to hold mental, emotional energy for. It doesn't mean that's impossible, but I want those who are supporting teachers to really understand the ask. And to normalize for teachers, it's not because you're a bad teacher that this is hard. It's because your brain naturally goes into protection mode. That makes sense. And you can be the boss of your brain, just like you're teaching your students to be the boss of their brain. And so that's part of what my work is trying to impart currently in picture book form. And then, as you mentioned, Light Up the Learning Brain will really just blow this wide open for folks.
I love that. And I have conversations with teachers a lot about these things. And I always tell them that I could never do their job. They're like, I could never do your job. And it's like, I am one-on-one with a kid for an hour once a week.
Yep.
You are with 30 children, maybe more, 5 days a week for 6 hours a day. There is no way I could be calm and regulated during that.
Right. Right. And so as we're supporting teachers I get all jazzed and then stop finishing sentences. So Paige, you're talking about, you know, the best intervention in this situation may be to work on some relationship building. So I'm going to suggest that with a lot of care and support for that teacher's nervous system and what that may bring up for them around, like, I just came here to teach. This kid is disrupting my class and now you want me to spend more time with them. Isn't that rewarding the behavior? Which, how often do we hear that? And so this is where I come back to those foundational building blocks of learning. So maybe would it be helpful if I just explain that model a little bit? Okay. So the foundational go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say yes. And can you touch on explaining why it's not rewarding the behavior?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. So, well, let me just start there as far as this is part of why understanding how brains and bodies work, I think is so essential, because that's actually a better starting point is we are, as humans, state-dependent creatures. So which state our nervous system is in will determine our behavior. I don't mean that in a, my brain made me do it, so it's not my fault kind of way. But what that can teach us is if my upstairs, calm, curious, connection-seeking, planning, time management, like if that part of my brain is running the show, then I have capacity for language and reasoning and even understanding cause and effect, right? Like some of these things that we want kids to understand when we think about consequences, which that could be a whole other episode talking about, the dreaded word consequences. When the downstairs brain is on, when that brainstem and limbic system, your automatic act without thinking part of your brain is on and running the show, then that's when you're going to see more of the behavior, like, some of the impulsive stuff or some of the aggressive stuff or shutdown or prickly, messing with others or whatever that stuff is. If I am trying to reason with a kid to get out of their downstairs brain, I have lost the battle, right? Like we're just going to stay in the, I'm just going to get more and more frustrated. They're going to get more and more frustrated. So what I would see happen time and time again is, we would teach kids coping skills as professionals and then expect them to be able to access those coping skills that are stored in their upstairs brain when they're in the middle of a downstairs brain moment, and that there's a disconnect there. We are missing the boat, and everybody ends up frustrated, right? And so when we talk about working on building relationship, or when we talk about slowing down, or when we talk about, I talk a lot about using play and playfulness in parenting and teaching in any sort of interaction with kids, including when you want them to get stuff done, because play wakes up that upstairs brain. So the strategies that I encourage and support, including relationship building, are strategies that are going to strengthen the staircase of the brain. They are going to strengthen the ability for downstairs brain signals to make it all the way up to the upstairs brain for processing so that I can use my calm, curious, connection-seeking, problem-solving brain to choose a different way next time or to repair, to have empathy for somebody else's experience if I've done something wrong. If I'm just being punished for doing something wrong, I'm not building that staircase. This is not advocating permissive parenting or, you know, just letting kids run rule the roost at school at all. Kids need structure and boundaries, and we can apply that structure and boundaries in ways that we know build brains, build well-connected upstairs, downstairs brains. Does that answer the why it's not rewarding the behavior?
Yes, thank you so much from a nerdy brain standpoint that is understandable to me.
Excellent. So the building blocks of learning. So this is from Turnaround for Children, which I believe just went through a name change. So I think you can still find them at turnaroundusa.org, but they are now, I think, tied to a university in a different way. They created a very a thoroughly researched understanding of what components build a learning brain. Like, what does it take to have these different things that we want to see in our kids, and not just, and things that could be worked on and taught, and that the research sort of supported those things. And the found, so at the, you know, toward the top, you'll see things like self-direction or civic identity, agency, academic tenacity, right? These things that we want to see our kids develop as they grow. Even executive function and self-awareness are not quite at the bottom of the pyramid. Like, we think of self-awareness as a pretty basic skill, but even before solid self-awareness or social awareness and relationship skills, at the very base of the very foundation of how humans learn is attachment, which I talk about in schools as safe and secure relationships, because the word attachment can get all squirrely for folks. So safe and secure relationships, stress management, and self-regulation. And the reason I think it's important to talk about all three kind of together is that in a lot of ways, safe and secure relationships are part of what makes stress management and self-regulation possible. So if we think about infant development, for example, a newborn is not, we don't expect them to have self-regulation, right? It's all meeting the need and co-regulation with their parent or primary caregiver. And there are thousands and thousands of instances of meeting the need and co-regulating and meeting the need and soothing and helping them feel safe and meeting the need and meeting the need and meeting the need before there's any, before they're building that connection from the downstairs to the upstairs brain so that they can pause and think things through and develop some frustration tolerance and be able to accept the word no. And I'll throw in here that for some brains, no is always going to be a hard thing to accept. And so for a lot of the kids that I've worked with, certainly kids with trauma, some of our neurodivergent folks, expecting kids to just be able to tolerate the word no is often expecting too much. Therefore, we find different ways that we can communicate boundaries. It doesn't mean no boundaries. It means I might say, "Ooh, I know you want to stay at the playground longer. We're going to come back tomorrow." I'm not saying, "No, it's time to go," right? Though I'm still communicating the same thing, but I'm doing it in a way that is helping them be successful in self-regulating, right? I'm helping them by how I'm bringing this up. Okay, I'm going to get off on a whole tangent there if I'm not careful. So when we think about these foundational building blocks, really a lot of that is happening in home. And I know a hefty chunk of your audience is parents, right? So many of our listeners are parenting. And so part of why I think talking about this foundation is so important is these are the skills that are going to help your kiddo be successful with the you know, time management or the connection to peers or even growth mindset or, you know, having some oomph to stick with things and persevere, that whenever I'm seeing those things go awry on the regular, I'm coming back to check this foundation. Where are we on safe and secure relationships? How is this kid feeling safe and seen? Where are we on stress management? Do we have some sensory tools? Do we have, like, are we paying attention to the big picture of how this kid is able to tolerate life? And if self-regulation is a challenge, what are we doing to maybe co-regulate and keep building those capacities for self-regulation? So what, you know, how am I even modeling my own self-regulation? How am I modeling my ability to press pause when my lid is about to flip? Like, mom feels tiger brain coming and I am going to take a breath. I'm going to take a break before I explode. So I'm going to do that so that I don't make a mistake here, right? Those little moments are so powerful for our kids that we're not perfect. We all have downstairs brain moments and we can find our way through. So that's the crash course in the foundational building blocks of learning.
I couldn't tell if Paige was going to say something or not. Sometimes it's hard when there's like three people because then we end up talking over each other. So I was like, wait a second. But I love that. Where do you find that the teachers or the parents that you work with struggle the most? Like, which building block is it that is usually the most difficult?
That's an interesting question. I think so. I think kind of like we were talking about before, that the way that our own nervous system can go into protection mode, can sort of defend, you know, go into defense mode, makes the safe and secure relationship one pretty challenging sometimes, because often the kids who need the most support, really with a whole foundation, are kids who need extra support on safe and secure relationships. So our kids with trauma histories, our kids whose own nervous systems maybe have been sending false alarms of danger or experiencing danger in a situation that someone else might not. So if you've got sensory processing differences or autism or things like that. And so what I see happen time and time and time again is that because this kiddo's brain is in defense mode, it's really easy for the adults around to end up in defense mode too. And then we have miscommunication galore, where this kid is surviving the best way they know how, which is maybe with a really strong porcupine brain or a really strong turtle brain. And that does not necessarily invite relationship, because even asking for help is an upstairs brain function. And so I find often my starting place with both parents and teachers is getting to know our own downstairs brain, like getting to know our own protection mode, because when that's triggered, when that's activated, I want to pay attention to what's sending me there. Is it that when this kid acts up, I feel like a failure as a mom? Is this bringing up, you know, when this kid does this thing, is it bringing me back to when my, you know, mom and brother used to go at each other? Is it like, where is this protective stance in me coming from? Is it that this stage is really hard, right? So many parents struggle with the twos and threes stage of kids having more agency and starting to use their voice. And the typical path of development includes lots and lots and lots of downstairs brain moments for kids, right? So if that is a struggle, how can I support that parent around sort of normalizing the behavior and giving them some tools to regulate themselves so they can bring their upstairs brain to this kid's downstairs brain moment? Because that's really the ball game, right? Like, if we're both in our downstairs brain, no staircase is being built. And so I want to really support the adults to hold that.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking a lot of people that we work with. And so we have a lot of like neurodiverse families. So mm-hmm. neurodivergent parents, parenting neurodivergent children. And mm-hmm. I think that that's a lot of what shows up is the behaviors are either triggering or overstimulating and activating the parent, or mm-hmm. the parent is sensitive to sensory stuff. And then it's like, I need to focus on myself before I can even support my child through this mm-hmm. downstairs brain moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's absolutely true. And so again, that's part of why I find normalizing what's going on in the nervous system so helpful for kid and adult. It's not either the student or the teacher, or either the kid or the parent. To be truly child-centric, we have to support parents. Like, we have to support the adults involved. And so, so helping parents, normalizing that parents have needs too, and that's not to the exclusion of the kids' needs, but especially when I'm thinking about, families who have different sensory needs. So I also live in a house of neurodivergence, and my husband has ADHD and dyslexia. I tend to be, I certainly don't qualify for sensory processing, issues, but I am probably on the more sensitive side. And so loud noises are problematic for me at times. And then two of my boys have ADHD as well. One also has dyslexia. So like there's a lot of things happening that impact how we all show up for each other. So that means that sometimes I use earplugs because just my family's natural noise level is overwhelming to my senses. And sometimes it takes extra energy to do, this, that, or the other. I need to make sure that I am tuning into my kids' need for squishing and squeezing and those kinds of things, and then tend to my own need to not have anyone touch me or be around me. And how do I balance that and my marriage? And, that we can have compassion for, yes, it makes sense that your downstairs brain was activated. Let's back up and piece this together and see if we can solve this puzzle and try a new plan. Right. I think that that's what I see be so successful, because we can be curious together. We can dig into our own downstairs brain moments. We can figure out what our needs are in the situation and go from there. And that to me is really, that's the hopeful side of all this brain science, is that when we understand what's really going on, we can find our way through. It's not one and done. Like, let's keep figuring this out.
Yeah. I think too, so many people that are parenting right now were raised before the science came out, before there really was any type of this like gentle, informed, or positive parenting, or responsive parenting, or whatever term we want to use for it, right? It's all kind That's of right. in the same boat. But I think that this allots for a lot of compassion, because I found when I'm working with parents, there's this underlying belief that in order to raise emotionally healthy children, we have to be in our upstairs brain all the time and able to show up for them all the time. And then we're going to mess them up if for some reason we have a downstairs moment. And I do a lot let's unpack that, mm-hmm. because you can still emotionally show up for your child. You can still practice responsive parenting while acknowledging, like, I'm in a downstairs moment. I need nobody to touch me. I need a little bit That's of time, right. and then I'll be available. My kids are a little bit older now. I'd communicate this in different ways. Now they're 8, 6, and 4, almost 5 next week. But I've started letting them know, like, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm not available right now. I will come find you as soon as I am available. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not available right now. I don't have it. Or I used to just say, I'm feeling stressed. I need to go. I used to be my go-to. And my kids have picked up on it, right? Now that they're older, I have a little bit more verbalizing with it. But I even personally battled with this idea that if I'm saying I'm not available right now, even though they're screaming or they need something, then I'm going to traumatize them because I'm not showing up in a responsive way for them in that moment. And that's not true. So I think really understanding the science allows us to hold compassion for ourselves too, and know that it's okay for us to have those moments. We're not causing extremely deep wounds, and that's that right. You're allowed to have those boundaries and still raise emotionally healthy children.
I think that's so important. And it makes me think of a couple of things, but one is that stress is not bad. We like raising kids stress-free is problematic. Like kids need some good stress. Kids need some challenge in their lives to work through, because that's how growth happens. Just like if you're trying to build muscle, you need to stress that muscle the right amount. You don't want to overstress it or you injure yourself, and you don't want to understress it or you're not actually building muscle. Well, the same thing is true for our nervous system, right? If we want our kids to develop some grit and, you know, the ability to persevere and some of those bigger upstairs brain functions, that requires a little bit of dealing with a moment that mom's not available. It doesn't mean mom will never be available again. That's problematic, right? Like it means that we're seeing human processing in a human way, and that's good. And, you know, I love that there's such a push now for being attuned in and responsive and conscious discipline and all of those, you know, all of those things that you were talking about. And we know from the research that it's not about 100% attunement every second of every day. That's impossible. So Ed Tronick is the still face guy. And he talks about, I think it's around 30 to 40% of the time is a reasonable expectation during early child, like during infancy and toddlerhood, in that like super hands-on parenting time of life, that it's still only around 30% that you're going to be actually tuned in and tracking with a kid. And he shared a story. I don't remember which podcast I heard him talking about it on, but he shared a story where he had a parent and child come in for the still face experiment, which we can link to. There's a great video on that if that's something you want to link to. But he had a parent and child come in, and this was a super tuned in mom, clearly, you know, had been really showing up for this kid, but this kid had not experienced any real separation, like could not tolerate this 60 seconds of disconnect from mom. Well, that's not sustainable. So then when he did disconnect from mom for just a minute, he was so inconsolable to come back to neutral. And so I think when you tell your kids, like, mom's stressed, I'm peacing out, I need 5 minutes to regulate, like, not only are you showing them that it's okay to take 5 minutes to regulate, but you're also showing them mom comes back, right? Like, you're showing that, so part of attachment is safety and security across time and space. And so you're building that across time and space. I'm still your mom, even though I'm having a downstairs brain moment.
I also want to add that it's impossible to white knuckle your own brain and nervous system. So if you're forcing yourself to show up in these moments where your child is in their downstairs brain and you're also in your downstairs brain, it's not going to build safety, security, and attachment. And you're going to build way more if you take a few minutes, regulate yourself, get back into your upstairs brain before supporting your child.
That's so true. That's so true. And I like that example, like the analogy of like white knuckling yourself to regulation. Like that's, I think, especially I see it in moms. Moms tend to put this pressure on themselves. I put this pressure on myself to show up all the time in every way, you know? And so I just love that you're naming that we just can't all the time. And that's not, it doesn't mean you're failing as a mom. It doesn't mean your kid's going to be ruined, right? That those are downstairs brain thoughts. And we can say, thank you, downstairs brain, for trying to keep me safe, but I'm good. We're good. I got this.
I love that. So Jessica, can you tell us where to find you, where to find these specific resources? I know some of them I actually have already pre-ordered myself, Light Up the Learning Brain.
Yay!
But yeah, tell everyone where we can find you. I would love also for us to include the link to that video in the show notes, just because I think it'd be a good visual, like,
it is back so up helpful
to everything we were saying.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you can find me at jessicasinarski.com, S-I-N-A-R-S-K-I. And that's also on I'm most active on Instagram. So Jessica Sinarski on Instagram. And as far as the books go, I do have a shop right there on my website where you can get books. And there's a Riley stuffed animal and a little sentence completion card deck and posters and all that kind of stuff. You can also find the books themselves wherever books are sold. So it's on Amazon and bookshop.org and Barnes and Noble and all of those kinds of places. So specifically, if you're looking to really dig into feelings and understanding the brain with your kiddo, the Riley the Brave's Big Feelings Activity Book will walk you through just some lovely, super kid-friendly, playful ways to do that. And Your Amazing Brain is coming out next week. So if you pre-order as you're listening to this podcast before October 11th. So you need to order by October 11th. And then there will be a link to fill out a little form for the pre-order bonus. So you get the book and we'll get you all those details.
And is the pre-order bonus if it's ordered from your website, or is it?
So you can order it anywhere you want. What I'll do is make sure that you have the link. The bonus will be through my publisher, ncyi.org. And on, if you go to ncyi.org/youramazingbrain, that's where the form will be. So you'll just need your order number, whether it's Amazon, my website, bookshop.org, or you can order directly right on NCYI's website. Any of those places you want to order is fine. And then just make sure you fill out that form.
Perfect. Thank you so much. We'll include all of that down. Well, not all of that word for word. We'll include links down in the bottom of the show notes, where you can find Jessica, what her Instagram is, pre-ordering by October 11th. And then also the link to make sure that you're getting those pre-order bonuses.
Yeah. Yes. And I should say the pre-order bonus is a digital resource pack. So it'll be emailed to you and it has things like a DIY, you know, build your own 3D neuron and crossword puzzle and really some tangible things to help you take this and use it in creative ways with the kids in your life. So I'm super pumped for you guys to have it.
All the therapy activities page. Oh, I'm so excited.
Oh yeah.
We're always looking for like new creative things.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, it was great talking with you both. I'm excited.
Okay, hold on. I gotta find the button.
Thanks for coming to Mindful as a Mother podcast. If you'd like more of us and Mindful as a Mother, you can find Paige at Instagram at Parenting with Paige and Lindsay at Linz_Adams LCSW. Find us on TikTok, Instagram, and in our Facebook group, Creating Community and Smashing Parental Stigma, Embracing Mindful Motherhood and Positive Parenting. Thanks so much and see you next time.